And we continue on with our Wildcat Wednesday with the K-State Extension District's Keith Martin and Jacob Weber here this morning. Don't forget, you can give us a call at 620-251-6909 with any questions for these two, as I believe we have someone on the line. Good morning. Do you have a question for Jacob or Keith?
Yes, sir. I was wondering if I could get Jacob to speak about these. I believe it's called a twin girdler
twig
beetle.
Twig girdler.
Okay. Yeah.
How are you?
Man, they're tearing my pecan trees up.
Well, seemingly. Okay, yes. That's one of the trees that you'll see twig girdlers quote infest, but actually mm-hmm. it's not an infestation, so to speak. But I guess this is a reproductive phase of a twig girdler. I'm not sure exactly what the adult twig girdlers consume. I imagine they consume foliage on those trees, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But what the female insect is doing is she's laying eggs in the in that branch that is severed from the tree itself. The reason for the girdling of the branches is that the larvae that are going to hatch from the eggs cannot develop in sap-filled wood, so the notches actually cut the flow of sap into the tree or into that branch. And you notice that pretty much all those branches are going to be about the same diameter where the notch is made.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the reason for that is because the insect is of a certain size, and the legs or spread of the legs can only go halfways around the branch. So at that point, that's where she makes the notch. And
mm-hmm.
the branch doesn't fall out of the tree right away. It falls out when that little peg of wood that's left on starts to dry out, and it becomes brittle and breaks and you get wind. The actual egg-laying process is done during maybe August into early September. You don't start seeing the branches falling out of the tree until maybe mid to late September, early October. As far as anything that's going on now, there's nothing. No more branches are being chewed and notched right now. It's done. The insect has finished the egg-laying process. The branch falls out of the tree, the egg hatches, or the larva hatches, and it starts consuming the interior of the branch itself, and eventually it reaches a full pupa size as an insect inside that branch. It pupates inside the branch and then emerges as an adult insect again next summer. And the process repeats. It's a one-year cycle. And the larva phase is the most significant phase of the life cycle, and that's inside that fallen branch. As far as controlling it, there's no need to control it. They don't seriously damage the trees. You'll see them on hackberry, elm, and pecan, hickory. I think those are the primary trees that are affected. If you want to, you can pick up the branches and burn them, and it'll destroy the insects that are inside the branch. But that won't stop the insect from visiting your trees next year, because the adult insects are very strong flyers, and they're going to find a suitable branch or tree to lay the eggs in. That may be your tree, and you may not see very many next year in your pecan tree, because they go through kind of cycles. You'll have some years where there's quite a few of them, and some years where you don't see too many of them at all. I usually see them every year, especially in elm trees. A lot of them in elm. What you want to do right now? You don't have to do anything. You can pick up the branches and get rid of them.
I've been told to burn them, you know, as soon as you can, and that's basically about all you can do. I was just wondering if they did damage the tree a lot.
For commercial pecan growers, it would be a loss of crop potential for next year, because the pecans are produced at the terminal ends of the branch, And when those are severed from the tree, you're losing that crop for next year.
Yes.
And of course, they commercial growers are controlling or spraying for pecan weevil. So at the same time, they're actually controlling the twig girdler, which is incidental there. So it's not an issue for commercial growers. They take care of that with insecticide. For home growers, there's no need of doing anything. You're wasting your time and your money to try to spray the tree.
All right.
So
hey, Jacob, I appreciate it very much. Very informative.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for your call this morning. And yes, again, if you have a question for either Jacob or Keith this morning, 251-6909. I'll check this phone line real quick. It's not blinking at me, but we might have one. Good morning, caller. Do you have a question for us? And I figured it was just an open line. So, yeah. All right, we'll continue on here this morning. Again, any questions about maybe how to prepare for the winter time, or if you have something around the yard, such as a twig girdler, we have spoken upon those a couple times
right.
in these last few weeks, certainly.
Yeah.
As
that's they
when they're showing up.
They emerge.
Like most things, when they show up, it's too late to do anything about them.
well, on this one, yeah.
There's not. And if you really. Even though there's lots of branches on the ground, if you really look at all the branches up in the tree, it's a very, very low percentage of them that are actually cut. But it's something that's kind of drastic for sure.
And there's lots of buds and small twigs left behind where that branch falls off, and they just grow right back in, fill it in. You wouldn't even notice there was anything missing on the tree.
But they do make a little bit of a mess in your yard.
Yeah, just a little bit. And it's good for conversation.
It's
good for conversation.
Well, you had mentioned, too, kind of the cut that is made is almost surgical.
The cut is... It's a dead giveaway.
It's amazing.
It's a very clean cut that's almost the same depth all the way around, just like a cut a little circle.
Wow. Yeah,
it's almost like they got a little...
insect beavers.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Very surgical with that. Well,
like he was cutting tubing, getting a tubing cutter and going around. It's kind of what it looks like, a really complete circle.
Comparison.
Well, we've hit the cooler months, fall time as well. Any advice for anyone out there with calves right now?
Well, I
Keith?
Would think, for one thing, as we mentioned, we are getting cooler. So, and fortunately, we had some rainfall, which has really got our pastures up. So, we do have some grass to graze, but eventually, we're going to have to probably be feeding some hay. So, I'd recommend, if you haven't done so, doing a forage sample. That's going to let you know what you're actually feeding, and then from knowing what's in your hay, you can determine then depending on the stage of production if any additional protein supplement and energy supplement is needed or not. If you're feeding in the absence of a forage sample, it's almost guaranteed that you're either underfeeding or overfeeding, and both of those can cost you some money. One, by just feeding more than you need, can cost you money, but the underfeeding can actually is more costly because that results in a lack of production or lack of pounds to sell. If you're a cost of a forage sample is somewhere between $18 to $20 or $24, just depending on what all you want tested for. We have forage samplers available in all of our offices, and I would be glad to help you take some samples if you'd like to do that. 331-2690 is the office I'm going to be at today, or 784-5337 in Altamont. Both those are 620 prefixes. I'd be glad to do that. For example, I was just looking at some forage samples I got. Some of the things are pretty variable, particularly things like Bermuda grass, Sedan grass, because those mature pretty quickly. Another thing that's very variable in terms of quality is anything that has wheat straw in it. For example, I just recently looked at a sample that we just submitted last week, was a crabgrass wheat straw sample. And after looking at the results of that sample, we should have said wheat straw with a little bit of crabgrass sample, because the protein was very low and so was the TDN. So anything that's variable, it'd be a good idea to get a sample, because there's a wide range of quality. Something like native grass hay, I can pretty much tell you it's going to be somewhere around 6% protein plus or minus 1%, and about 50% TDN, and get that pretty close. But anything that's variable, be a good idea to forage a sample, and then from there we'll know if you need any protein supplement or not. And I guess the key point is it costs the same amount to harvest, store, feed good hay as bad hay. So when you're putting up your hay, trying to harvest it at the right stage of maturity, like Jacob was talking about maturity on potatoes earlier, once grasses reach the reproductive stage, or when they put up that seed head, their quality is much lower. So forage sampling is just a good idea to know and fine-tune what you're doing there.
All right. And again, we do have a caller on the line here real quick with a question. Good morning, caller. You are on the air. Do you have a question for us?
I've got a question about beef cattle. I purchased some cows last spring, and one of the vaccines I gave them was a pink eye vaccine. And then over the summer, I wound up getting pink eye really bad, and some of them have come up blind even. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering what else could be done.
The pink eye vaccine, since it's a virus, it's very specific. Did you have someone make a virus based off of some swabs they got from your cow's eyes?
It was with a blackleg 7-way that I got at the feed store. Okay. I gave it to them before they got it all.
Probably the pink eye vaccine just wasn't specific for the virus that you had. If you have a serious problem, some veterinarians will actually take swabs from your cattle's eye and that have pink eye and develop a vaccine for the following year. And that would be specific to that specific virus, because since it is a virus, getting the right one is a difficult. So I might recommend talking to a veterinarian that does that and maybe work on that for the following year. And the other thing you can do is sometimes fescue seed heads can cause irritation. You may want to clip those. Not only do you reduce eye irritation, you also can reduce the amount of the toxicosis from fescue seed, from the seed head. So clipping your pasture and maybe getting a more specific vaccine for your cattle would be two things I would recommend.
Okay. Yeah, I've read up on some of that also, and I've heard some of that. But these were some cows that I bought, and our established herd, they haven't had pink eye for several years, and I guess they've all kind of gone through that cycle.
Well,
then these I bought at the cell barn, and they were probably exposed to all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe they didn't have resist. I'm not very well versed on resistance to pink eye, but that makes sense to me. So.
Well, thanks for your time.
All right, caller, thanks for your call this morning. Have a great rest of your morning. All right, and again, next Wednesday, of course, if you have any of those questions, you can, of course, call in at 251-6909 for either of these. Just about to the bottom of the hour here, so any final notes from either Jacob or Keith?
I might mention we are pretty close to weaning some calves, particularly if you're planning on keeping those calves after you wean them. Some ways to build up immunity is to most vaccines, as the caller just mentioned, you're going to require a booster. And if you can do the first vaccine while they're still on the cow, not under stress, you can give the second vaccine when you're in the process of weaning, and in general have a lot lower health risk. So you may want to get prepared for weaning by getting current on your vaccinations, and also be a good idea if you are planning on weaning the calves and keeping them around to get them used to the feed. Exposed to the feed that they're going to be having after you wean them, so that it's not quite as much stress. Generally, you want to just reduce as much stress as possible.
And real quick, what's that number again if they have any testing that needs to be done?
331-2690 is an Independence, or 620-784-5337 is an Altamont, or they can just go to the website and find my email address at rkmartin@ksu.edu.
Okay.
And next time I'm on the air, we'll talk about curing sweet potatoes.
Curing sweet potatoes, yes. And I'll be expecting a 10-pounder out of you.
Okay, very good.
Point.
Okay.
Again, that's Jacob Weather and Keith Martin this morning with us from the K-State Extension District. This is the Mighty 690 KGGF.